How's it going? And welcome to episode 97 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And once again, joined by Kevin Hastings, who should be followed on the Twitter at Hastings. Kevin, this is our part two. I'll probably title it that way as well, of our streaming series. I don't know if you can call a two-parter a series, but it's two parts at least. We're going to talk some pitching streaming here. Obviously, we had a great time talking to Steve Weimer about hitting streamers, but streaming pitching is a whole different monster. People have been doing it for years and years. If you could say in very one sentence, what was your experience streaming pitches last year?
It was overall successful. However, it contributed to my lack of strikeouts that I've talked about on multiple episodes. My weakness in many leagues this past season was strikeouts. And I think I just didn't have enough quality starting pitchers to count on a weekly basis.
That when you said it was overall successful, all I heard was it was overall stressful
as
because
well.
The talent, especially in your 15s, it was very difficult to, if that was your strategy going in, it was very difficult to continue to do so all year long and be confident in your decision making every year. But we're going to talk about what we can do maybe differently this year, and we're going to bring in some big guns when it comes to streaming pitching. We are joined by our very special guest, Nick Pollock, founder of Pitcher List, and he's here. I'm just happy he made it. He stopped his very important other things that he was doing to be here. and he's also the reason for our very existence, Kevin. Welcome, Nick. Thanks for joining us. And how you doing?
What is happening? I don't think I ever want to be introduced as the reason for your existence again. Oh, gosh. No, I'm so happy to do this. Let's talk streaming pitching. It's an art that unfortunately has to exist. And the whole goal of said art is for you to stop doing it. And I'm looking forward to diving into it more with you guys.
Yeah. All right. We will get into that. We do have a couple of news items. We kept all the pitching news for this episode, Nick.
Aw.
Yeah, I know, just for you. Even if they're pitchers that you probably don't even care to talk about.
They're still pitchers. We can do this.
Then I'm gonna kick it off to you first then, Nick. We do have a signing in Arizona. I think there's definitely some implications here for some pitchers that you've already talked about on the Plus Pitch podcast. You've already done the Arizona rotation, and then they go and change it up by signing. The signing.
Don't they know what I'm doing?
They're not paying attention, obviously. Zach Davies, he joins the Diamondbacks rotation. First, about Zach Davies specifically, though, do you think he can do anything under Brett Strom there, now that he's there, to make him actually interesting to you, especially in the format that you focus on the most, those 12 teamers, that maybe he'd be normally on the wire all season?
Zach Davies is the perfect on the wire candidate. I don't expect him to be drafted in leagues. And even with Brett Strom being there, I don't look too much into pitching coaches. I think a good way of thinking about it is there are some guys that are just generally better than others. Still, every pitcher fits differently with every pitching coach. And to have a blanket statement like, oh, this pitching coach is really good, thus this guy gets better, is too much of a gamble to take when we have all these other variables to use for pitchers. And when it comes down to Zach Davies, his changeup can be good, and that's about it. That's really it when it comes down to him, and it makes it so tough to stream him. You can even say, like, last year there was a moment you were considering Zach Davies, but yeah, no, I really don't have any interest. And honestly, this move affects Dre Jameson and Ryan Nelson a little bit more. I assumed that the Diamondbacks would get somebody. I was maybe thinking it would be Johnny Cueto. Could have been Michael Walker. Maybe a return even of Luke Weaver. Because Dre Jameson and Ryan Nelson were the 4 and 5 before this signing. And now it's one of those two gain that fifth spot. I would imagine it's Dre, just because Ryan had the injury at the end of last year. They just want to make sure that he's fine. But it does affect those two. And it likely means that one of them will be a streamer in season. Ryan Nelson, when he does get his opportunity, will be picked up off the wire. And that's a little bit more interesting. But Zach Davies, nah, get out of here. I have no interest in this.
Kevin, I think that you probably stray away from him in general, that is pitching prospects that don't have a set role. But in your opinion, Is this completely taking Brandon Vaught off your board if he was on your board to begin with? Chris Clegg did his very first pitcher list article on him and had some very nice things to say about him. And he's obviously did really good things in the minors by the end of last year. Was Vaught somebody that you were interested in? And does this signing to strengthen the depth of the Arizona rotation make him so much less desirable, even in a draft and hold league, that you're either pushing him too far down your board, you're not going to get him, or just off your board completely?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it affects it much at all. Obviously, Zach Davies is, Arizona is planning on him giving them innings. But if Vaught is performing early in the season as many expect he could, I don't think this move is going to hold him back. We know that there's always issues with every starting rotation. Five starters isn't enough. Sometimes seven or eight isn't enough. I think if the Arizona determines Vaught is ready and they're willing to start his clock, they'll do that. I don't think Zach Davies is going to block that from happening.
Yeah, and that's probably a fair assessment about Zach Davies. He's not probably blocking anybody of any note.
Yeah, there likely will be some injury of some kind at some point. It's what happens every single year. And it could even be something that, like, the Arizona Diamondbacks say, let's just go six-man for a little bit, or we have a spot start for a doubleheader or whatever it is, and that might be when Vaught comes up. If he's that good, you probably will see him before the June expectation that we normally see. Oh, the door is open for anyone who passes Super 2 and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I agree with Kevin here is, yeah, we're not really going to go after Vaught now.
All right, Kevin, your boy found a new home, Wade Miley. He's signing in Milwaukee, deepening that rotation as well. Can Wade Miley, can he become relevant in your world now that he's with the Brewers in that ballpark? And what kind of impact are you seeing on the rest of that rotation because of this?
I think Lauer's the odd man out, probably. There's already talk of him possibly moving to the bullpen. I think that's mostly on fan message boards so far. I don't think we've heard anything from the Brewers on that front, but definitely a possibility. And yeah, I am one of the high people on Wade Miley. I have been for quite some time. When he's healthy, I think he's better than the perception, and especially if we're chasing wins. Two of the last three seasons, when he gave us 150, 160 seasons, double-digit wins. One of those seasons, his home ballpark was Great American Small Park. He's not going to give us a ton of strikeouts, but if we're talking streaming pitchers, as is the subject of this episode, he's one of my favorites for it. Put him in the right matchup, and I love me some Wade Miley. Not going to run him out there on a weekly basis, set and forget, but at an ADP of over 600, that may come down a little bit now that he is signed and is presumably in the rotation. That probably adjusts a little bit, but I don't think enough to scare me away. And especially in draft and holds, definitely will be a target of mine, as he is year in and year out. And on my watch list on Fab Leagues, probably not drafting him in Fab Leagues, but definitely on my watch list.
Nick, are you of the opinion that, like, Wade Miley, if he signs somewhere, he's in their rotation, regardless of how deep the rotation might be? Or do you think, even with the signing, even Wade Miley could be knocked down into a bullpen role?
The Brewers needed depth. They had six starters, Adrian Hauser as their sixth, and you don't really want to start Adrian Hauser because all he can do is throw sinkers to right-handers, and that's it. That's all he has. So I'm thinking Wade Miley's in the rotation. I don't think it's Lauer that gets kicked out, though. I think it's Aaron Ashby. They were toying around with Aaron Ashby.
You're going to upset a lot of people with that, Nick.
Trust me.
I'm starting to lose connection here.
I'm the one who put out the tweet saying Aaron Ashby deserves best. I've been shouting for Aaron Ashby to have a spot in the rotation since he first came up in 2021, and it's been frustrating to watch. But I see the signing and I go, that's what's going to happen. Eric Lauer sticks around to that. Why would they take out Eric Lauer? Eric Lauer was consistently a starter last year for the Brewers, and I really don't see why they would remove him from that opportunity. There's something to be said about Freddie Peralta's injury record, and maybe the Brewers want to be a little bit careful with that. They may even do some crazy things like a Wade Miley and Peralta double up, or maybe even with Ashby involved there. But the way I see it right now is Woodruff, Burns, and Lauer are like, yes, you are going out there, you're getting a six innings how often you can. Fantastic. I hope they do that with Wade Miley. I hope they do that with Freddie Peralta. I hope they do it with that with Aaron Ashby. Then I go, wait a second, that's six guys. And so that probably will be Aaron Ashby is the one that's out on it. I'm with you, Kevin. I found myself in a weird place where I'm liking Wade Miley generally as just a fantasy streamer more than the average person. I think there's a lot of those Septembers in the past that have really haunted the memories of people. But 5 months of the season, Wade Miley was really good for your fantasy teams, right? He does well with cutters inside righties and changeups away. That's just how he runs. It's great. I don't know if his hit per nine, though, is that good. It was a 9+ hit per nine last year in the small sample. That kind of might be the newish Wade Miley. And I am a little scared streaming him out of the gate. I want to see him from the Brewers say, yes, here is 5+ innings on a silver platter, which you ordered, dear. And the gloved man lifts up the silver cover of the plate. I'm watching Downton. I still don't even know.
Oh, and there it is. Terms. I was like, where's this coming from?
And I still don't know what to call any of this. From the footman. Okay. But I got to see that first before I get any interest in Wade Miley in my drafts. Streaming wise, yeah, don't ignore it. As Kevin mentioned, like, he could get wins. The Brewers are going to win games somehow. The NL Central is just, hey, who wants it? Everyone's like, I'm good. So Wade Miley's going to get some wins there, and that's pretty cool.
So the other piece that Milwaukee added to their pitching staff, I definitely will not say their rotation per se, is they traded for Bryce Wilson from the Pittsburgh Pirates. One interesting thing about Bryce Wilson is that he has no options. And so he should, if he's going to be on the Milwaukee Brewers, he's going to stay there, or he's going to get DFA'd by them as well. If Bryce Wilson got a spot start, is there a situation in which that you would actually be considering him as your streaming pitcher of the day, Nick?
When you say that Bryce Wilson has no options, the good news is that the Brewers have options not to start Bryce Wilson. 5.52 ERA, 1.42 WHIP, 15.5% K rate last year. His hard contact rate allowed last year, Bryce Wilson, was 189th in the majors. We look at a four-seamer and go, please don't be above 30% hard contact. And Bryce Wilson's overall was 33%. Not just on your four-seamer. That's the average of all of his pitches. Mm-hmm. Not the one detrimental one. That's across all of them. No, I am not starting Bryce Wilson. The only way I can ever see it is if literally there's no one else that is able to go five innings. And I don't even know if Bryce Wilson is able to go five innings. His IPS last year was 4.6. That's innings per game, but still pretty much he really went that five innings. And sure, he had that 8-inning game against the Reds on September 28th. And what did he do the next one? Came in relief, 3.1 innings. Like, what are we doing here? No. The idea also that Bryce Wilson would get that opportunity, he's the 8th guy? At best, you can even argue like Jason Alexander is more interesting for the Brewers. Maybe Ethan Small gets that shot. Like, why would the Brewers say, oh, Bryce Wilson, you're our guy? No.
Kevin, in the deepest of deep leagues, we're talking 15-team draft champions. Bryce Wilson is going at ADP 733, but the caveat is he's only been drafted 12 times out of the 49 completed drafts. Would you make it 13? Is there any reason you would make it 13?
No, absolutely not. I agree with everything Nick just said. And over the past two seasons at the major league level, he is an out below 190 innings. And with roughly 6% walk rates in both of those seasons, that 1.4+ WHIP that Nick talked about. And it's that hard contact percentage. He's getting hit hard. If you have a WHIP that high when you're not giving up bases on balls, you're getting hit hard on a regular basis. And I have no interest.
Yeah, this is the type of player that, especially in early draft champions, I go ahead and at the change the filter for dates, but I'm assuming that he got picked up in the earlier draft champions, obviously before he got DFA and sent to Milwaukee, but that you're trying to take this risk. You're trying to throw a dart and hoping it works out. And it turns out you end up with a roster spot that's completely wasted throughout the course of the year. Sure, something magical could happen, but it's very unlikely, as you guys have pointed out, for all the right reasons. All right. Well, that was all the pitching news that I saw come through this week. Most of the free agents have been signed up, gobbled up by new teams, and news is a little slow right now. So we're going to get into the idea of streaming pitchers. We're going to do that with Nick Pollock in just a moment. But first, we're going to take this quick break. All right, we are back. Of course, you're still listening to On the Wire. I am Adam Howe, joined by Kevin Hastings. We are lucky enough to be joined by Mr. Pitcherlist himself, Nick Pollock.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. You got the mister. You got the title, if you will. Don't you love going on Pitcherlist Podcast Network shows and then everybody just talking about how you are Mr. Pitcher? Like,
no, that's not why we made this.
It's not.
It's all absolutely out of love, not. Though,
for you guys to talk about everything I don't want to talk about.
It's true. That's true. And I let everybody else talk
about
it.
Job at it.
But you notice that we still bring you on to only talk about the pitching.
I know. It's great. It's so great.
We want you to be comfortable, Nick. All right. Let's pick your brain, Nick, a little bit. You pick a streamer every single day. Talk to us a little bit about what kind of a streamer you are choosing. We talk a lot about NFBC platform formats here, 12 teamers and 15 teamers, but obviously the depth is a little bit different than say your CBS, your Yahoo's, your what have you. But when you are picking a streamer every day, what are the requirements and what are you looking for?
So you gave me a heart attack just for a second, because in the show notes, it says section 2 theme hyphen, the art of streaming hitters.
I did not update that.
And oh boy, I was like, oh no, I am about to be on a podcast and I got to figure this out. No. Okay. So as I go through my process, I've really articulated as best as I can at the start of each one of those articles. It's just a copy and paste every time, but I think it's a very important preface for anybody that is jumping into it every day, that it's a requirement. You have to read the methodology and what you're going through. Read the dang notes.
Read the notes.
Because I understand you go to the same, here, I've ranked all the starters for today. You see them and then you just get upset at them because you have a different methodology. And that's totally justified. But I don't know your methodology. And this is mine. And it's outlined like this. So what is that methodology? It's for 12 teamers. I only do guys that are under 20% rostered. You could, technically a streamer is under 50%, right? As in more than half of the leagues will have this guy available. Thus, sure. I should be able to do that. However, I think that those that are coming to Pitcherlist are not in an abandoned league and they're in generally a little bit more competitive than just, oh, hey, there's four of us that are really into it and the others aren't. If it's just like four of us and it's not really someone that is actively doing everything they can to win that one, it's just, that's not a serious league. So in anyone that is actually, okay, I need to actually figure this out on my own. Yeah, it's not going to apply really to the sub 50%, right? It's going to apply more to the 20%. Also, I think it's just easy if you go under 50%, because a guy that's 40% rostered, I don't know. Merrill Kelly took a long time to be above 50% last year. And that's just, I would just choose Merrill Kelly in those days because he's just cruising and it's a Vargas role. And there you go. Or Martin Perez or Spencer Strider took a while. Same with Christian Javier to get over the 50% mark. And that's not fun. That's not a challenge. That's not helpful to everybody observing it. So you could say 30%. I think I did that actually originally. And then I found that I was still getting into a little bit of those comfort zones. And I said, you know what? Let's actually work to try and do the sub 20%. So then I put them into tiers. And I realized later on, I actually increased the difficulty of my tiers to the point of saying, look, like you are just, if you have them on a fantasy team and you're starting them, if you have this guy on your roster and you are starting that pitcher. And I made it a whole list of like auto starts and probable starts and everything. Probable start is pretty much, is honestly like 40% rostered guys, but they are in a 12 team. You're just going to start that guy. You're just going to call it a day. So most of the time when I pick a streaming pick, it's in the questionable start tier. And that is when I say, I'm not normally starting this guy. And that's, I would say, 80% of my streaming picks are ones that I'm not actively suggesting that you do. Because at the end of the day, streaming pitching is not something I suggest for a full season. It just isn't. You are putting yourself in too much risk. There's a reason why they are not rostered in 80% of leagues. And the goal is to actually pick up guys and start them that you might actually hold on to after that start. So streaming is something I recommend in April and May a lot because you are trying to find guys that are your fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth starters, and then you hold on to them for the year and then you swap them out later. But I don't draft saying I'm expecting to have my last two starting pitching spots to always be changing. In the beginning, yes, but I want to get that Merrill Kelly or that Tyler Anderson at the beginning of the year, the Carlos Rodons and Robbie Rays of 2021, Spencer Striders and Christian Javier's when they're not rostered, George Kirby when he came up and just soared, right? That is how you succeed in your leagues. And you look back and go, my gosh, I got 150 innings out of that guy. That was amazing. Way better than getting 250 from that's a mediocre ERA and WHIP. And sure, you're going to get a little bit more strikeouts with that one, but at what cost? It's really important to nail that. When I put out this presentation in Florida, I said the first thing is streaming sucks. It does. It's just not a successful thing. All right. So all of that out of the way, all that prefacing. What do I look for? High strikeout rates. Can you strike out guys a lot? Great. That's already innately giving you a higher opportunity to be of more value than your standard streamer. If you're a sub 20% K rate guy, you're just hoping that they can go six innings then. That's the goal of it. Do they have a chance of going six innings? If you feel like they're a five and dive guy, then I feel like this is a higher chance of being an unsalvageable start if they're not having any strikeouts assigned with it. Then the first and foremost thing really is just, what's the opponent? Like, are you going against the Marlins? Great. Can you go at least five innings? Cool. You're already in the questionable start tier, right? But those honestly are the biggest things for me. Volatility doesn't matter as much because the worst pitchers are good 50% of the time. Like literally, Patrick Corbin starts, half of them last year were actually serviceable. Believe it or not, right? But it's just because he's allowing six earned runs in like the other half. It's like, all right, yeah, we don't want to touch this. It's too risky. But when you're streaming and you're thinking like, all right, I need something good for this, rule out like the season long ERA. Rule out like his last two starts were bad or something. Like, does not matter. Do I think he's in a place right now where his fastball is good and his slider is good? Is it so bad? Is it so terrible? He's so lost. And like, all right, then I'm not going to go for it. But generally it's like, all right, it wasn't good last time, but it doesn't mean it's not going to be good this time. And it's about recognizing what are their good starts like? And then you're like flipping a coin. Like, all right, I hope it's the good one this time against a weaker opponent that gives maybe a 60-40 chance instead of a 50-50 chance. And that's really it. There isn't some like magical, wonderful thing. It's just grasping what that ceiling is and getting over the small sample and finding the right opponents. That's streaming in a nutshell.
I was really hoping for the magic, Nick. So you're really disappointing me and everybody else, I think. We just need the magic sauce, right? You mentioned that but streaming is more relevant early on in the season. But Nick, Kevin, I'm going to get your take on this first. But like, where does it get to a point especially in a roto league, Kevin, where you've gotten so desperate to hit certain category marks, whether it be strikeouts or chasing wins or whatnot, that you have to be streaming later on in the season? How do you dictate how many roster spots you're going to be streaming in order to play that kind of catch-up game?
I don't think it's a predetermined number of roster spots. I think it's sometimes, I think I agree with Nick. What I have said over the past couple of seasons is if you're not streaming pitching early in the year, you're not getting the breakout guys because your opponents who are streaming already have them rostered. They've already grabbed them. They go out and have a good outing and you're like, oh, let's go see if he's available. Nope. The guy that streamed him already rosters him. So I agree with that 100%. And then it really depends. That sounds like a cop-out, but it really is a case-by-case basis. How desperate are you getting in these categories? When you get down to 2 weeks to go in the season, if you're chasing wins and strikeouts, I'll throw almost anyone out there that's playing the Marlins or the Rockies on the road and just hope. No one, there's a really good chance it's not going to work, but I know if I don't attempt this, I don't have a chance. And then you're gradually throughout the season, you get closer to that point from the point that we're starting out at. I think a lot of this, it has to do with the ball a lot as well. And we don't know what the ball is going to be like. I think the reason streaming pitching became a thing was it was successful when the ball wasn't as lively. And I'm talking up through 2018, we had success. Now that's 5 years ago now, and we're still trying to stick with this plan that obviously didn't work in 2019, didn't work very well in 2021. And in 2022 was really up and down. And thanks to Dr. Meredith Wills, we probably know why. And I think we really have to pay attention early in the season to what ball we think is being used. If it's a deadened ball, like we're told MLB wants, then streaming does become more viable and we can take more risks. But if it's a lively ball, we don't want to throw those guys out there.
Nick, when you're drafting, how does the idea of especially streaming early, trying to get those breakouts, how do you build that into your draft strategy as far as what pitchers are you picking up in draft? How long are you waiting for pitchers, knowing that you are probably going to stream at least a couple roster spots?
Yeah. So one thing I really do want to point out here with Kevin too is 15 teamers. When I say stream early, and I want to be very clear about this because I wasn't before, I actually really mean, especially in a weekly league where you lock your lineups, streaming isn't actually starting them. It is, especially early on, because you already have like your six that you're starting that week.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Right? You should have that. And you aren't actually getting the ones at the bottom here shouldn't be inside of that six. You should have roster spots dedicated to it. I talk about this a lot when it comes to my drafting strategy. My biggest strength, personally, is following every starting pitcher. What do you know? Shocking. And read the SP roundup. That's what I do every night. I go over every single starting pitcher. So I have my finger on the pulse of finding someone that might be breaking out or exceeding expectations. And that allows me to know who to pick up in season and find my value. So my bench spots, especially April and May, are more dedicated toward pitchers. It's just how I am in daily leagues and in weekly leagues. I think that there's more opportunity for myself to seize that. That also means that I'm likely missing out on more of the early hitting breakouts. I also just generally believe that it's harder to tell what is a true hitter breakout, especially early in the season, than it is a pitcher. Because pitcher, we've got like velocity changes, we got usage changes, we got movement. I can watch them and understand them better. A hitter hits some home runs, and it's just he hit home runs in April. Is that the same as him hitting in July? I don't know. And we get a better sense. I feel as if you have more second half breakouts with hitters in this respect than you do with pitchers. So it's easier to catch up there later on. But it also means my draft strategy is focused more on hitting and to say, look, I'm not going to rely on those early season pickups that are the guys through the entire year. Michael Harris? I don't even know when he came up. I'm so sorry. At some point he did.
Yes, that's true.
Right. I mean, who else was do you guys have? I know Taylor Ward was one. I actually got him in my 12 teamer, Taylor Ward, but then of course that slowed down. I'm even just trying to think of who were the early April, May hitting breakouts that actually.
We thought it was Tyler Naquin.
Brandon Drury would be one.
Brandon Drury, sure. Stephen Kwan. You could say maybe Christian Walker, but even though we didn't really buy it, we're like, is this going to stick around in this way? But I guess that's my point is you can really identify quick. Oh, this guy's throwing harder. It's like it's two ticks harder. And like oh man, that slider got 11 whiffs on this night. That's pretty cool. So I really do structure my team like that. But I really want to emphasize TGFBI, you're playing in that one. NFBC, streaming is not necessarily starting them the first 2 weeks. It is anticipating a breakout and saying, okay, like I like this one. And this is the one that's a higher upside one. It's almost a stash at first that turns into a future possible stream. It's all linked together because the goal of streaming isn't just that week. It is making it so that roster spot is now dedicated to a pitcher that you trust. And that's what I do in 12 teamers. My pitching staff by the end, it's like, I don't have any room. I'm the guy with the limes. Like, how am I going to hold all these limes? That's how I feel with my pitching staffs traditionally by June or July. Maybe one other spot open up, injury, that kind of thing. But that's how I work in those. Now, that is a different element than, hey, it's Friday. I have a weekly league and or a daily league that it's a head-to-head league. Oh, I need to find the right guy for Saturday and Sunday. What I do in these cases, and this is why I encourage everybody in a head-to-head league, which I know is not necessarily what you guys are talking about with NFBC stuff, but if you're in a head-to-head league, your Sunday has to be, who am I matched up against this week? How many starters do they have? How many do I have? What? And don't even get into the weeds of, oh, he has DeGrom against this. I have Corbin Burns against that. What was my projected outcome? No. You just even it up. I have Burns. He has DeGrom. I have this. He has that. Just like really loosely do this and say, okay, I likely need X amount of starters or not. Then you go to the entire week and you see who you like, who you actually would say, this is the guy. You get it 2 days before. That is the rule. You do not wait to do it the day of. You will lose it. Someone else in the league will get that guy. You always go 2 days before. Your Sunday guy, you get him on Friday, right? And so it should never be a situation where it's Saturday and you go, oh no, I need somebody for Sunday. That should just never happen. Then you're all of a sudden starting Bryce Wilson. Oh. You don't do it. But that's the best advice I can give for anybody in a head-to-head league. If you really want to focus on that and be like, I'm trying to nick, I'm not playing that game you're playing. I'm playing the, I need to decide who it is through the week. 12 teamers, I tell you right now, there are always, there are like four or five through every single week that I'm just like, this is a slam dunk. And it's not. It's normally like 75%, but 75% is way better than like the 55%. And those are the ones you circle. I do it with Tout Wars every week. Is like my Sunday is just looking at the entire week and planning like, all right, that's a good one. That's a good one. I also even look at all the starters available in the chart that they have. And I say, all right, not this week, but next week, I'm going to want this guy. And I actually jump a week ahead because I know that I have a bench spot and I'm not going to start this guy this week. So that's the stuff you can do for streaming if you want. It's not nearly as time consuming and hard as you think it is. But that's the extra element of my strategy for streaming pitchers. Not hitters. Pitchers.
We got the right outline here. Don't worry. Woo. We'll let everybody listen to Steve Weimer talk about hitting streamers.
Oh, thank
you. Don't worry about it. Yeah, we talk about it, Kevin. We talk all the time about, especially the whole section of our in-season podcast is talking about looking for volume pitchers, aka two start pitchers, a week ahead of time. And not only because you want to be ahead of it, but also in a fab situation, usually those, they're a lot cheaper to get the week prior. And then again, you can stash them on their bench, or maybe if they have a good enough matchup, you can throw them in there. So that works the same way in just outlining the future week that you have. And I think that it works really well in the head-to-head like you're explaining, but it can work in a roto league, in a weekly pickup league as well, especially if you're just trying to get ahead of the curve in the remainder of your rotation is solid, or it's at least set. Right. You don't have a lot of question marks at the back end. Kevin, are you doing anything differently in your DCs, your 50s, and your draft and holds when it comes to these? All of your pitchers are now become that are called like team streamers, right? You have players that you roster, but they sit on your bench, like Nick, like you were talking about, like you're going to be picking up guys ahead of time. You might not start them right away, but you want to be ahead of the curve. All of these guys, obviously, in a draft and hold are these team streamers. Are you building in the idea of streaming pitchers in a draft and hold, or are you just focusing on making sure you have X amount of pitchers regardless of their role? We talk a lot about the value of relief pitching in this kind of a format. What's your take on streaming pitchers in a draft and hold?
I'm trying to be more selective of the guys that I draft for that purpose. We talked about Wade Miley. He's a guy I like for that situation. In draft and holds, I will have Wade Miley on several of my teams. But I think for the most part, my general strategy for 2023 is to have a better set pitching staff as chasing wins. My weakness last season was strikeouts. I'm addressing that. And like I said, I'm going to pay attention to what the ball seems to be doing early in the season. And I'm going to have a more select few of back end starters that I hope to not need, but will be there if I do. And drafting even more of the semi-late inning, not necessarily the setup guy, but the more of the relievers that we also talk about on a weekly basis. And I probably, in most cases, am going to use those guys as my sixth and seventh starters when I get into a bind and start to lose some of my depth.
Nick, I'm going to end this little section with this question. I don't think I really put this in the outline, but you talk about it a lot, and I want to get you to elaborate on it a little bit more. You talk a lot about, especially in a 12-teamer, you want to be able to get your top, I think it's your top four starting pitchers out of your draft as guys that you trust are going to be on your roster or in your rotation, active all year round, set it, forget it type of thing. Obviously, yep, things can change and what have you. But how quickly are you moving on from the other four, an 8 or 9 man rotation? As you're talking about streaming, especially early in the year, looking for those breakouts, you still drafted these guys. These are still guys you were worth putting in capital. It goes to the adage, like, how quickly can you move on anybody? How much is draft capital worth once the season starts?
One thing I really do value in my rankings is how quickly I believe I can make a decision on them. And it's why I have the adage, don't draft Tobys. We don't do it. Why? Because you're not going to be able to decide if this is going to be more than it is. Like, it's just kind of whatever. And you feel attached to it at that point. I would much rather go in on something, see that this isn't working out, and get out of there and not feel that attachment. So traditionally what I do is I go heavy on starters. For like my 12-teamer drafts are something along the lines of 4 or 5 rounds hitting, 3 rounds of pitching, one other hitter I like or something, get my fourth guy, get my 2 relievers, maybe my 5th, because there's all of a sudden like, why didn't this guy survive? And then I get out and I go back to hitters and I just get the last bits of my lineup. And then I return to see what is left at that point. Because traditionally in these drafts, sure, I could go after, I've been doing a couple of these mock drafts for 12 teamers recently. There are some really interesting ones that have fallen. Detmers, I'd really be interested on that. But if the slider isn't getting whiffs and that's that problem again, then I'm out. That's a fun one to go for. Kenta Maeda. I want to know quickly if Kenta Maeda is looking like old Kenta Maeda. If he isn't, I'm out. Bailey Ober, is he working his 4-seamer up and slider down? Are the Twins going to be overprotective once again and make him a 5 and dive? Then okay, then I move on. Sixto Sanchez is my most popular 23rd round pick because I could move on to him before the season even starts. Fantastic. That's my last round pick and I've already made a decision on him. That's so important to do. But if I'm saying, oh, you know what? I think Zach Davies is worthwhile and might work out or something. And then the first start comes back and it's 5 innings, 3 earned runs, 4 strikeouts. And I'm like, what else did I expect? Yeah, what do I do with that? Because there's no decision being made. There's nothing different to change it. So I purposefully go after guys that projections hate, because projections hate them because they're so volatile. It's, oh, it could be this outcome or that outcome. And I'm not chasing a 50% success rate. I'm chasing like a 25% success rate. And then moving on to the next 25%. I go through 4 of those and I have 100%. That's how probabilities work, right? But I call it the Miss Frizzle method. Get messy. I make mistakes. No, wait, what is it? Take chances, make mistakes, get messy. There you go.
There it is.
It's so important. You are not drafting a best ball team. It is not a best ball league. Do not look at the fantasy pros. Oh, I'm going to come 3rd in my league. That's a best ball league. Draft like a waiver wire league, which you're in. If you do that, you can put yourself in a much better position. And that's how I go about it. You got to take those lottery tickets. More lottery tickets than anyone else means you have a better chance of hitting the lottery.
Somebody has to win.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. I think that's all very good advice. And we're going to put some of that to the test here with a couple of groupings of pitchers. I'm going to play a little game. We're going to do that right after this second quick break. All right, we are back. We're going to play our ask game. We played this with Steve with hitters. We're going to only do this with pitchers for Nick. You're welcome. This is our avoid, stream, keep. So we got a trio of pitchers and groupings. I'm going to ask you guys each of this grouping, who would, if you were forced to draft and hold one of these players all year, You couldn't drop them. I will give you the flexibility of...
This is a best ball league?
Oh, you, did you read the outline?
I'm just clarifying for everybody.
All right, this grouping of three. There's three pitchers in each grouping. I want you to pick one of them. You'll have to keep on your roster. You'd feel comfortable enough to keep on your roster all year round.
Oh boy.
Another one you could only stream, so you could only pick them up, use them, drop them, and then assuming he's still available down the line, you could stream him again throughout the season. And then the third one, you would be avoiding all season long as of right now. So you would not be able to pick them up all year round. So I'm gonna let Nick take a look at the groupings first so he can get his bearings. Kevin, I'm going to throw the first one out at you, specifically since we just talked about one. These are three guys that have yet to debut. I think many of us expect them to debut at some point, whether that's in early May or even a September call-up. We have Kyle Harrison of San Francisco, Andrew Painter of Philadelphia, and then the aforementioned Brandon Pfaadt of Arizona. Kevin, which one of these stashes would you be more willing to keep, draft right now, keep on your roster all year round? One that you would be expecting that you'd be able to stream at some point, and one that you'll probably be avoiding completely.
This is tough because this is the toughest grouping that you have on the outline here. And it's because we don't know when we're going to see any of them. And so that plays a big role here. Because they're so close, and because of that, I'm just going to assume they all come up at the same point in the season. And in that case, I think Andrew Painter probably has the best chance of entering a rotation and keeping it. I like his stuff. I like the strikeouts. I love the ballpark for Kyle Harrison, so he'll be my streamer. And in spite of just saying that Zach Davies is not going to prevent Brandon Pfaadt from being in the starting rotation, I guess he's the odd man out here. But I'm going to go Painter's stuff to be my keep, Harrison's ballpark, along with the talent, of course, to be my streamer. And unfortunately, then I got to let Pfaadt go.
Now, let's clarify something for you, Nick, as well. All of these players, with the exception of one who has an asterisk on them, we were drafted in one of two of our completed On the Wire listener leagues, which are 12 teamers set up the same way as online championships on the NFBC platform. So they are weekly, they are fab. And so this is where I got this groupings from. These are guys that are either 50% of the time, in theory, going to be on the wire week one in some of these fab leagues, especially these 12 teamers. Do you have any other insight? I know, you know, focus on players mostly when they jump into the majors, and then you do your deep dives, you do the gift breakdown.
They don't exist until they're in the major
leagues. Then they get a gift breakdown of their first start, which is amazing. Absolutely.
My understanding is that Kyle Harrison still has some command issues. And the biggest problem I see of young guys coming up is that I don't trust him to throw strikes. And that's already instantly like I'm avoiding. So Kyle Harrison's going to be the one I'm not touching this year. It's really tough between Pfaadt and Painter. On one side of it, the Phillies, do they want to go with Bailey Falter? It could very much be a case of Painter is so good that they just bring him up like right away. I'm not going to rule that out. We saw it with Chris Paddock, for example. We've seen Luis Castillo jump from AA to the majors in a little bit of a different scenario. If Painter is just that good out of spring, we might see him 2 weeks into the season or whatever, past the team control deadline. So yeah, that's cool. Or maybe it's the arbitration deadline. Regardless, that deadline. No, I think it's team control. And that to me is going to put Painter above Pfaadt. Honestly, it's the Zach Davies problem. And I cannot believe how much I hate Zach Davies now. But I also heard the stories about his personal stuff too, which doesn't make me a fan anyway. But yeah, so Painter is the one I'm going with. Pfaadt is the one that I guess I can stream. And then Harrison is someone I just see.
You let somebody else take that risk, sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, now your second favorite topic of conversation here. This grouping I labeled, we don't draft Tobies, but we have three guys on here again. All drafted in one, but not the other, except for one. Eduardo Rodriguez was not drafted in either, but I had to fill the category.
That's a very interesting option. So,
Steven Matz, Aaron Civale, and Eduardo Rodriguez. Nick, start us off. If you are forced to draft and keep one of these guys all year round, who is it? Who are you streaming? on a regular basis, if available, and who are you avoiding?
Man, this is really difficult. I mean, okay, the one that I'm drafting is Aaron Civale. I think that's pretty easy, honestly. Civale has the most intrigue with his stuff. His curveball is really good. And when he goes cutter curveball, he's generally pretty successful. And the Guardians should still win games. And he'll go 6+ innings more consistently than the others, I think, as well as Tony Francona pops another popsicle into his mouth. So he'll be like, oh, I have to go out and get him now. This is great. So Steven Matz with the Cardinals is the one I think I'm going to be streaming. I hope the Cardinals defense is good again. That would be nice. It wasn't nearly as good last year as it was in 2021. But it seems like this is a good situation for Matz. We thought it would be initially. Injuries got in the way and all this kind of stuff. And he should be able to get back to it. That would, like, on a consistent basis, like a streamer, I'm like, okay, I need someone for Saturday for a win. All right, Steven Matz, I think if you're in this rotation and going, then, like, great, I'll try that one. Should limit the damage with ground balls and everything, fine. Eduardo Rodriguez is the most interesting one because he could get picked up a ton if he comes out of the gate and killing it. He's the least stable of this group, which is why if I have to make these decisions, I'll just avoid it, Eduardo Rodriguez, and just not touch it. But man, I think we're underrating Eduardo's ability. He got hurt and then he had the personal stuff and he never really got a chance to get his footing back, but he's actually kind of good by the end. The changeup was starting to look like its old self again. If he can make his four-seamer like it was in 2021, then Eduardo Rodriguez is legit. We all thought that he was going to be amazing when he came over to Detroit in the first place and all the bad luck was going to go away. It could be much better now for him. I don't want to rule out Eduardo Rodriguez, but if I have to say right now, yeah, Aaron Civale, I'm keeping. Matz, I'm streaming, and Eduardo Rodriguez, I'm going to let someone else take the chance on that.
Kevin, are you more willing to take that risk and even keep Eduardo Rodriguez in your streaming options? Or are you keep taking the, quote, safety of Matz as your streaming option throughout the year?
I think... Yeah, the latter. There's just too much unknown with Eduardo Rodriguez for me, and I agree. And one thing I'd like to add about Civale, he missed about a month two separate times in 2022. And when he came back from that second month off, he was really good. 3.35 ERA, 46 strikeouts in 43 innings. Only four innings in the first start back, but after a month off, that shouldn't surprise us. Only one of his other seven starts did he not go five innings to end the season. So I'm actually pretty excited about Civale for 2023 at his current price of 333 ADP in Draft Champions League since mid-November. So yeah, I agree with Nick's entire lineup here of these three. And of course I would, if like we talked about with Rob on the Pull Hitter podcast, I still don't do a lot of deep dives on pitching. I trust Nick Pollock. I trust Eno Saris. I trust
Eno, not me. That's much better.
This is what, so I would have to feel really strongly about something to counter what Nick was saying here. But I would like to add that, I'm pretty excited about what Civale can do at his draft cost coming into 2023.
It's so interesting. That curveball is really good with Civale. There is a constant feeling with him that there hasn't been a season where he's really able to just stick to a plan and go through it. But it really does depend, I think, on the curveball being a like 35% thrown pitch. Like, it just needs to be that. And sometimes he doesn't do it because he just doesn't have a feel for it that day. And that's the problem. It's not like out of choice. He just goes, nah, I don't really care for my curveball. 17%. No, it's because he doesn't have a good feel for it. He doesn't trust it now. So fine. But I just want to remind you, Kevin, I am wrong very often. That gut doesn't need to be so strong to be able to disagree with me.
All right. We have a couple of relief or used to be relievers at one point in their career, maybe as recently as last season, but they have found new life in new locations for some and just in a rotation. We have Nick Martinez re-signing up with San Diego, Jose Suarez in Los Angeles or in the Anaheim portion of that, and then Zach Eflin finding a new location in Tampa Bay. Kevin, we'll start you off with this one. Again, who are you avoiding? Who are you streaming and who are you keeping all year?
This one's tough as well. I know he's been up and down as a starter, but the fact that Tampa would sign him for the amount that they gave him, I think I'm going to roll with Zach Eflin here. He may not be the best pitcher of the three, but I think he's probably going to have the best opportunity. I think they're expecting him to eat some innings. And for that reason, I'm going back to my chasing wins. I think Eflin will go 5 innings for Tampa most times out. So that's where I'm going to go for the guy to draft and keep on my roster and use most weeks. Nick Martinez and Jose Suarez are really, this is a tricky one for me. And I'm really anxious to hear what Nick has to say. But I think my streamer would be Nick Martinez. I hate to say I wouldn't use Jose Suarez all season long because he would definitely be on my radar as a streamer. But I think Nick Martinez has been really good for San Diego in the relief role. And if it sticks at all, if he can maintain his velocity when he's stretched out, then that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go Eflin, Martinez, Suarez in that order.
Do you have, let's see, how interesting does Nick have, interesting things that Nick actually have to say that are worth Kevin wanting to hear it? You're making some faces like, I don't know.
Okay, there's only one answer I feel good about in this, and it's my streaming choice. And that's actually Jose Suarez, because Jose Suarez is a platoon arm. His sinker inside the lefties and sliders away are just devastating. He takes down lefties. So if you're facing a team that has a lot of lefty bats, I would feel more comfortable leaning on Jose Suarez in a given day. He does not have a good plan of attack for right-handers. The sinker is not nearly as effective. The four-seamer is not. The slider, he doesn't have confidence getting that down and in as a back foot slider. The changeup is fine, but it's not enough. So it's the perfect streaming one for me, as it's more outlined of, cool, who is he facing? What are they more lefty heavy? Then great. Then I go with Flynn versus Nick Martinez. So this isn't fair because I haven't gotten to Nick Martinez yet. But 20% curveball usage last year, and it was a very effective pitch for him. The curveball has actually been something that we've been going back and forth on, where Eflin, oh man, if he has his curveball on a given day, then he's really good. But then he hadn't for a while, only 10% usage or 11% in 2021, moved up to 20%. Really good offering, 21% swing strike rate, 41% O swing. I think the Rays recognize that and they'll be like, yes, more of that. Eflin has also said, I just don't always feel it. And if I don't have it, then I don't have it. And he just kind of goes away from it. I don't know if that's going to change or not. The sinker is a heavy called strike pitch, 26% called strike pitch last year, 32% CSW. It's what you want to see. I would say that I believe more in Eflin than I do Nick Martinez for just being able to go 5-6 innings. The Rays need volume. I don't think they're going to do the 4-5 inning game with Eflin. If you look at Corey Kluber this past year, you can catch it to Eflin. And yeah, they generally let Corey Kluber pitch when he could, right? So I think that's what will happen with Eflin. Do I think it's worth your time? Not really. Maybe the curveball is great, and maybe going from 20 to 30% or so usage will make that huge difference. And that will mean also that the ERA maybe could be under the 4. And maybe I'm overlooking the fact that Eflin had a 1.12 whip last year because he just doesn't walk anybody, and the hit per 9 was under 9. Maybe that does work out. By the way, if you have a 9 hit per 9 and a 0% walk rate, you'll have a 1 whip. That's how that works, guys. So keep it under 9 and a low walk rate. It's good. Now, Nick Martinez, oh, there is a chance. There's a chance. He just does not know how to locate his stuff a lot. Like, he does such a good job with sinkers inside with it. But then he doesn't go inside to lefties with a cutter. He makes bad decisions, like throwing a middle location sinker away at 0-2. And I'm like, what are you doing? Why would you do that to a lefty? This is just opening yourself up for opportunity to fail. So I think Nick Martinez has tweaks to make that could actually make him a much better pitcher. I don't have faith that those tweaks are going to be made. And that's really annoying to me. He does have opportunity. It's him and Seth Lugo currently as the 4 and the 5 in San Diego, which is hilarious. I could talk more about how Adrian Morejon's 4-seamer is unbelievably exceptional. And I didn't realize that. And maybe is like an amazing sleeper pick. But I don't know if he's going to start out of the gate. They got Seth Lugo and Nick Martinez, and they might get Johnny Cueto. Never mind, Morejon. I don't know. So how much Nick Martinez is going to start is up in the air as well. Eflin's is a lot more secure. It's a long way of saying that Kevin's pretty much except the whole Jose Suarez thing.
See, I get that. And I think that this grouping kind of really focuses on the idea of this activity is which one of these guys in my mind, which one of these guys has the least amount of volatility, even if they're not shiny, even if they're not going to get you everything you want. Eflin, I think we're all in agreement, yeah, has the least amount of volatility of these guys in the platoon splits that you talked about with Jose Suarez. Makes him, you're going to want to use him, but you're not going to want to use him all the time in very select spaces. So I get that's the idea of this, is like focusing on which one of these pitchers. These are all pitchers that are getting picked in the last 4 to 5 rounds of these 12 team drafts that we've been doing, which we have one just kicked off a couple hours ago. Kevin, I don't know where you're at in your draft, but we're already in round 3. So hopefully your draft moves along in that, and we can get some more data by the time our next pod rolls around.
Oh, we'll have it by then, but right now we're 8 picks in.
Oh geez. Okay. That's fun. All right, let's get to these number 6 starters. Nick, I'll let you take this one as well. These are guys that we thought they might be in the rotation at the start of the offseason, but through signings and through other changes in the roster, have probably got bumped into at least their number 6 spot. May not start the opening day in the rotation, but we would expect through various reasons they would get an opportunity at some point or another. Nick, you have to draft and keep one of these guys. You can stream the other one, and you have to avoid one of them altogether. Give me your takes.
All right.
Like putting Nick in uncomfortable situations.
So David Peterson, Hayden Wesneski, and Luis Ortiz. And the way I'm going to look at this is, what does their opportunity look like? Like, how do they get regular playing time? And then how likely are they to hold on to it when they get it? Right. So I think Luis Ortiz is the lowest here of that. Hayden Wesneski does look like the number 6. Tyone and Smiley have showed up, but Smiley doesn't stay healthy. He doesn't do that. He looks at health and go, what are you? I don't know what you are. Get out of my house. So David Peterson also is someone that could get a lot of opportunity. You have Carlos Carrasco with injury history. You have Max Scherzer, and you have the aging coach Justin Verlander. It just makes a lot of sense that David Peterson would get more opportunity and would go longer, and it's more defined, I think, was David Peterson than is Hayden Wesneski. It's a really good slider with a 26% swing strike rate last year. I'm going to go with David Peterson as the one I have to draft. Now, streaming, let's just throw in and say, all right, they're both starting. I'm streaming and then letting them go. So it's not so much about their opportunity, is just they have it by that definition in that moment. So do I want to do Wesneski or Luis Ortiz? I'm worried about Luis Ortiz's fastball, which is strange because he throws like 99, but it's more horizontal break than I want to. It's not a good VAA. It's not good stuff that you would want to outline swing and miss material. And it's a sub 10% swing strike rate last year. However, lots of softer contact, right? Not much hard contact on Luis Ortiz's fastball. It's a nice slider. He's not a command guy. And I think that's more of a volatile stream. And I'm thinking this not as like a stream in April and May to hold on through the year. I'm thinking like it is depths of those summer nights as you sweat because the AC is broken and you have no idea what you're going to do to win this game tomorrow. So I'm going to go Hayden Wesneski. I think there's just a little bit more polish to his approach and dependability on the breaking ball, and a little bit more of a win chance being on the Cubs than it is on the Pirates. So I guess I'm not touching Luis Ortiz. I'm going to stream Hayden Wesneski. I'm going to draft and hold David Peterson.
You have to. I'm assuming David Peterson is the number 6 with the Mets.
I wanted to be Tyler McGill so badly.
I just wonder if the fact that he's a lefty gives him a little bit of a leg up. They only have the one lefty in the starting 5 rotation. You don't know per se what you're going to get out of Kodai Senga at the moment. You just don't know. You have an idea.
Makes all the sense.
Yeah.
I want it to be Tyler McGill. He deserves it.
Kevin, I'm assuming that you could probably pick your 3 based on win probability alone, as you're going to change your Twitter handle to Chasing Wins, I think.
That was one of the biggest takeaways I had from First Pitch Arizona. And so I'm with you on this, Kevin.
Yeah. And like I mentioned last episode, I have done some diving to see if I can find any patterns we know relievers can get us wins. We know relievers are getting more of the wins than ever before, but nothing I have found leads to any pattern to where we can predict that for specific players, even specific teams. And I actually had a text conversation with Ariel Cohen a couple days ago, and he agrees. He's done the same dive. He said, no, chasing wins has to come from starters, which means streaming, right? That puts us in a tough spot. And yeah, I think it's interesting with the New York Mets rotation. Senga is the youngest starter. He'll be 30 years old, and he will be the youngest by 4 years in that starting five. So I believe David Peterson will have the most opportunity. We know his struggles have been the walk rate. He has shown flashes when he's not walking guys. He can be outstanding. So he's definitely the one I'm drafting and holding. And then my streamer is going to be, because of the chasing wins, is not going to be the Pittsburgh Pirate. It's going to be
Wes. Simple as that. Yep. It's not who it is going to be. It's who it's not going to be.
Exactly.
All right. Last trio here. Kevin, have you started off here? We have three guys that changed teams this offseason. Again, they were drafted in just one of the two completed listener leagues. We have Jose Quintana, Taijuan Walker, and Ross Stripling all found new rosters to make themselves home. What order are you putting these guys in, and how trustworthy are any of them in their new environments?
I'm a big, like with Wade Miley, I've always been a little higher on Quintana than many others. I love what he did in 2022, and I think he found a nice landing spot as one of the four pitchers 34 years older in that rotation. But I think this is a great landing spot for him, and I think the Mets offense backing him up, we'll definitely see more wins than we saw him last season when two-thirds of the season was in that Pirates rotation we just talked about. The other two here with Walker and Ross Stripling, this is really intriguing to me. I think throughout 2022, I was more of a fan of Ross Stripling, even though at times I think Walker was probably the better pitcher. But once again, San Francisco, nice ballpark for guys like Ross Stripling. Again, I like this landing spot. And so I'm gonna go with Stripling as my streamer. And as we start to see more projections come out, and we hear what Nick and some of the other pitching experts have to say, I might bump Stripling here up. I think right now he's my streamer just because I'm such a fan of Quintana, and I think it's a perfect landing spot for Quintana, although I do really like Stripling's as well.
Before you say anything, Nick, if you talk enough about a subject, you are automatically an expert. That's how that works. Expert, that's Nick. Science.
Whether you like the title or not, you're an expert.
Good or bad.
I'm not quantifying. I'm just using a word. I want to get your answer too, Nick, but I'm curious, which of these three guys, which one do you think gets impacted most by where they're going? Positive or negatively, whether it's going to a team that we have a narrative of we trust because they're doing fun things or good things to mediocre pitchers, or a ballpark that's going to hurt them, whatever. Which one of these guys do you think gets hurt or helped the most in either direction based on their new environment?
Yeah, I'll put it this way. Jose Quintana getting wins. There you go. There's the story of the podcast. Yeah, it's a great situation for him as a New York Met. Taijuan Walker going to the Phillies. I hope Trey Turner's defense really does have an impact for them, because that has been an issue for the Phillies across the years, is their defense behind them. Hopefully that's not as severe of a damaging point for Walker. Actually, it's interesting. We talk about the Giants a lot being, oh yeah, great ballpark. Righties actually are okay at hitting to the left field, but that's actually the bigger problem for Ross Stripling, because it's such a good changeup. He nullifies lefties a good amount with it, and then righties become the issue. So maybe that's okay there. But the defense was really bad last year. We used to attribute the Giants as like a really good situation for this, but look at Cobb and look at Wood, and it's, oh, it wasn't necessarily their just luck. It was, no, that was a terrible defense behind them. And I don't know if that is necessarily a good thing for Ross Stripling. Then again, you're coming from the Jays. Not a great situation there with the turf, and also not the best defense either. So I don't really know. I would think I can definitively say that the one who benefits the most from last year is Quintana. And the Cardinals defense wasn't as good as we wanted it to be anyway when he was traded. So that's the case there. I think the most definitive answer for me here is that I'm not going to have Tywin Walker on my teams this year. The fastball is not a good pitch. It was overperforming in 2021, and then he lost velocity on it, and he got away with it a little bit more, but like, it's, I don't like this at all. Lots of hard contact allowed on it. He's what? A 12% swing strike rate and only a 54.7% strike rate? That is so bad.
That doesn't seem good.
No. The league average of a slider is 63%. And that's generally what I expect, is like mid or low 60s on a slider for strikes. Essentially, this is the pitch he's hoping to get strikes with, right? But because that did poorly, he had to double his splitter usage from about 14 and change to 27 and change. And that has a 67% strike rate. And you know me, I don't want to buy into that. That's the reason that Tywin Walker did anything last year, is because a splitter was performing as well as it did. It had a 192 batting average allowed versus the 258 of 2021. And that's with double usage. And normally you see the inverse of that, where the more you throw a pitch, generally it gets worse because you get to pick and choose the spots you throw it in. But then now you have to use it in different scenarios and it's generally worse. It did better. Don't think that's going to happen again. So I'm out on Tywin Walker. Ross Stripling versus Jose Quintana. Jose Quintana got into a groove where he's able to throw four seamers up and curveballs down with immaculate precision. And that was shocking. It just came out of nowhere. I was dreaming of it in like early 2021 and never expected to ever see it. And then all of a sudden it just started happening in 2022 and it was great. I don't think that sticks for another year. I think that was the peak. While Ross Stripling, it's a really good changeup and there's still work to be done on the curve and slider, but the Giants should be able to work with that in a decent way. So I'm probably going to draft Ross Stripling and then stream Jose Quintana, but I could be convinced the other way of Jose Quintana over Ross Stripling easily. Both are interesting grabs at the end of your draft. And honestly, I would encourage more going for Quintana because in your 12 teamers, because it's pretty free, honestly. No one's really going after Jose Quintana. And the Mets have a really good schedule to start the year. It's Miami, then the Brewers. And what I always encourage is, sure, you go for the things you want to chase and stuff, but if you can have a start that you like the opening weekend, like always just do that and then reassess from there. And Jose Quintana should be, what, the four on this team? Maybe Senga's the five? Sure, it's four games against the Marlins. Start him on that Monday and or on Sunday and call it a day. This is great.
Yeah, you have to assume roster resource has Quintana as the five, but as the only lefty in that, you assume that they're going to mix and match that a little bit and bump him up. He might even be the three just because depending on what their matchups look like. Yeah, you can stream pitchers in your draft is what you just said, basically.
Pretty much. Yeah, you're right. You could do that out of the gate. Right. Yeah. Plan for the opening weekend. It's why I have the first two series in the top 200. It's interesting. It only works the first pull around, though. Like, second that Quintana goes, then he's the five again. See, I just feel like Quintana's earned the four and Senga would not be the four. That just doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, especially with what his schedule in Japan was, we say that it's always different just because of the way like the season goes. They have a lot more off days.
Saturday, yeah, exactly. Or whatever. Yeah.
So we'll see how that maps out come the start of the season in April.
Yep.
All right. This was fun. Whether you believe that or not, Nick, I'm not sure. It was fun for me.
Of course it was.
But we've got this that's pretty much it. But Kevin, I'm going to leave you with the opportunity to close this out with any additional words of wisdom, whether they have to do with pitching or not. This is all on you, not Nick. So you can pick whatever way you want to go.
First of all, while they may not have quite been ringing endorsements, I am very happy that I at least did not get shot down by Nick on my Jose Quintana and Wade Miley love. That's awesome. Gives
Absolutely
me some
not.
Comfort for some of these late round picks I've been making so far this season.
I have never won TGFB. I have never come close. Okay? I just want to put that out
just
there.
Just throw that out there.
Hopefully Quintana and Miley can get me another one. So that's what we're hoping for. No, Ariel Cohen had a great article come out today. We're recording on Thursday, I believe. Little baller. He talked to seven of the individuals that put out projection systems that we'll be looking at. And it was really intriguing to me. A couple of points. One, that is something we've been talking about, Adam, in recent episodes. At least both Todd Zola and Derek Carr have stated that they will let us know what they are doing with their projection systems according to account for the new rules changes. And that's what we've been talking about. Don't double count things. They're going to let us know what they were able to implement and what they probably just couldn't quantify and what is not already included into projections. So then maybe we do want to take into extra account and we wouldn't be doubling up. And the others will probably do similar, but they both point blank said that they will let us know what is included in their projection systems as far as the new rules go. The other thing that is really intriguing to me about this is that hasn't happened yet. So they did their projections, and even those that aren't out yet will do their projections as they have in the past, and then we'll make adjustments through the off season. So if you're somebody like me that downloads projection systems, puts them on a spreadsheet, starts adjusting playing time, when you do that, when the projections first come out, we're probably going to see more changes in the projections throughout the off season than we typically do as those adjustments are made. So that's something we want to pay attention to going forward till we get to March.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, it's interesting to know that, like, we put so, all the podcasts you listen to, these articles, especially when Steamer first comes out, because it's one of the first, if not the first, publicly available projection system with any clout, really, that so much content revolves around those projections and they come out, and all the stuff that we talked about when it first came out could be null and void. Even by now, as adjustments are made throughout, as free agents are signed, as teams change, teams contracts change, stuff like that. And not to mention adjusting then for the new rules, as you mentioned. So make sure
you're watching them. Steamer that you brought up, the rules changes have not yet been accounted for. So the initial projections that we have right now from Steamer, rules changes are not being taken into account, but they will, I believe the article said, by the end of January or early February. So that, just to that point, even though they've been out for a month and a half, 2 months now, they still don't have the rules changes implemented into those projections.
Hopefully, and this is a nice little lead in, Nick, we'll have some more clarity during PitchCon. We'll have some wonderful presenters talking about the implementation of these new rules in baseball and how they might affect fantasy baseball. Can you talk to our listeners about what PitchCon is and what they should be expecting?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you saw on Twitter yesterday, we are going to be hosting our fourth annual PitchCon event, January 25th to 28th, that is Wednesday to Saturday, from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. each day. So that's 44 hours of a baseball conference, four-day baseball conference from people across the industry, baseball and fantasy, to raise money for charity. And I'm so pleased to announce that this year, instead of 50% of it going to charity, it's going to be 100% going to the ALS Association. Amazing. Could not be awesome. More thrilled about that. And we're going to be giving away prizes to everybody. We have people from the industry donating subscriptions and merch, fun things like joining podcasts and helping out with drafts. That is free to do. You don't have to donate to be eligible to win those. You just have to fill out a Google form to say what you want to win. And we'll be raffling all that off at the end of the conference. We also have surprise announcements that are going to be going through it. And you can watch this entire thing either by just going to pitchwest.com/pitchcon. You can also just go to twitch.tv/pitcherless. That's where we'll be hosting as well on Twitch, either one of the two. And that will start again Wednesday, January 25th, 11 a.m. Eastern time. So many things to announce and show. We're going to be showing off PL8. We're going to be showing off the new big thing called PLV that we're doing, some other little surprises. Cannot wait for all of this. And you guys have something maybe that you're doing at PitchCon. You guys are going to be involved, of course. I don't know if you're ready to talk about it yet.
We've mentioned it. You have to give us the green light that what slot we're going to be in.
Oh, I don't know yet, but the schedule completely.
We've been manipulating our own podcast production schedule all off season so that we could time it to have our 100th episode live at PitchCon. It's just a matter of what day and what time, but yeah, that's lined up. We're excited. The format that I think we have lined up, we're going to have a few guests on, and that's what we always say. What makes this podcast so great is the amount of assistance we get from our guests throughout the course of the year, yourself included, Nick. This is your third. You have joined the 3-time club. It's very
like SNL.
Exactly. We'll start a little
question, Nick. So yes. January 25th. Is less than 3 weeks away. Is that exciting or scary for you?
No, it's exciting. Obviously, there's work to be done. But considering how amazing the fantasy community is, it's really easy once it gets going. It's just me just saying, cool, here we go, come on in. And this is great. The only annoying part is I have to come up with a schedule that adheres to all the requests that people have. Sure. That's the only thing. So hopefully everybody can let me know what that is early and then I can figure all of it out. And I'm sure there will be problems and this and that. But no, it's such a wonderful event. And I really got to emphasize that I'm just so happy we can donate all of it this time. In the previous 3 years, as you can understand, it's been difficult because of COVID happening and then COVID happening again, and then a lockout. And it's finally, we're excited for a full baseball season here. And the real vision for this was to be something that the entire fantasy community comes together to do, while also just, it's the best. It's 44 hours talking about baseball. So I can't wait for it. It's always such a fun weekend. And yeah, we'll get through the stress of scheduling. That's fine. We'll figure it out.
Nice.
And we'll all be better for it. Thank you, Nick. All right, guys, that's going to wrap it up for episode 97 of On the Wire. We will be back throughout the off season. Please make sure you're subscribing, sharing, reviewing the podcast wherever you're listening. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at HastingKevin. And of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. Once again, thank our guest Nick Pollock for joining us. Please follow him, if for whatever reason you're not already, at PitcherList on the Twitter. After all that, I am Adam Howe, and on behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. We bid you goodbye.